Good morning. Call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. Before we get going with committee business, I would like to recognize a group from a school up my way, and it's a group from Voyager's Expeditionary School in Bemidji, and would you all please stand up and be recognized? Thank you for being here. Thanks for coming down. So we have some minutes from a few hours ago that we need to review and have approval. Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move approval of the minutes with an amendment that we, instead of using acronyms for the organizations that we have folks coming from, I did talk to the CLA before the committee started, and it shouldn't be a problem, but with that amendment of actually spelling out what COPAL and MCEA are. So we are good for posterity, and in case there are other acronyms that groups use those same acronyms.
Very good. Does everyone hear the approval of the minutes with as to be amended? As Representative Beckerfin has suggested, any discussion on that? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Beckerfin. I think that will be helpful. Okay. And we do have somewhat of an agenda today, so if we don't get through everything today, we do have the room to come back at 6:30 this evening, and that's not my preferred choice, so we'll see what we can do to be out of here with everybody's help in our allotted time. So our first bill is House File 3924, a Hornstein bill. I see Representative Hornstein. Welcome. I will move House File 3924 to be before the committee and to be approved and referred to the Environment and Natural Resource Finance Division. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. This bill comes out of some work that has been done in the community that I represent, the Lowry Hill East Neighborhood Association, to be specific. But it does have statewide implications because composting is one of the most cost-effective and practical ways that we can address both our solid waste issues and climate issues. And so in Minneapolis, we have a curbside organics composting collection program that has been very successful. And as you know, composting organics now comprise just about a third of our waste stream. So this is a very, very significant part of our waste stream, and it's growing. So in Minneapolis and the communities I represent, homeowners have the opportunity to put their organics composting out on a weekly basis, and it is picked up along with recyclables and mixed municipal solid waste. But there is a important void that has been identified, and that's what my testifiers who will testify now will discuss, and that is the ability for those that live in multifamily dwellings, apartments, condos, other housing that is not single family, to have the ability and access to also have that same composting opportunities that homeowners have. And so this bill, House File 3924, proposes a pilot project, a grant program that would make it easier for those in multifamily buildings to have access to organics composting. And I just have several brief testifiers, Mr. Chair, who want to discuss their experience with this issue and why this bill is needed.
Very good. Are we ready to bring the testifiers forward?
We have Ms. Flannery and Ms. Jordan, and then we also have a representative. We have a couple of other people as well. So.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Caitlin Flannery, and I would like to share my story with you so you have an idea of the types of effort that this Bill 3924 would help support. In fall 2016, I was a renter in Minneapolis, Flower Hill East neighborhood. I had previously lived with my friend and her family in South Minneapolis, and this is where I learned how to recycle my organics waste. She was a homeowner, and she had access to the city's opt-in organics recycling curbside program. When I moved into my apartment in Lowry Hill East, I naively assumed that I could have the same service. I requested a bin from the city, but they informed me that my residence was ineligible for the service because I was in a multifamily building with more than four units. The city suggested I utilize the nearest drop-off location, but it was far and it was inconvenient. When I asked if they could open another drop-off close to my neighborhood, they said no. Unfortunately, it would be years before they had funding to expand the drop-off program. I did not want to wait years, and I was frustrated. Recycling organic waste is a simple behavior with a huge environmental impact that myself and a large majority of my neighborhood was not able to conveniently participate in because of the type of housing we lived in. I thought there had to be a better solution for renters like me. After all, the majority of the city was now renters. I decided to accept more responsibility in my community and find a solution. With the help of the Lowry Hill East Neighborhood Association and fellow community members, we worked in collaboration with the city and in partnership with a local business to open a drop-off in my neighborhood in August 2017. This drop-off was funded by the community rather than the city. The drop-off started with six bins. Within the first 3 months, all those bins were full. So we added three more bins. Within the next year, we added one more bin, maxing out the space available on the site. In April 2018, we opened a second drop-off in an adjoining neighborhood. In September 2019, a third. And this month, we opened a fourth. In addition to the drop-offs, we have developed a program that pairs renters and homeowners together in an effort to share organic recycling access. And we have developed a framework for getting organics recycling services directly into multifamily buildings. In just 3 years, our community-led and primarily volunteer-run programs have a combined participation of nearly 2,000 people, and they are busting at the seams. They speak to the passion that already exists for organics recycling access in Minnesota, and I ask you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, committee. My name is Catherine Jordan. I am a lifelong Twin Cities resident, and I began recycling my organics just a few years ago when I was living in an apartment in downtown Minneapolis. A friend of mine inspired me to try living as waste-free as possible, and together we challenged ourselves to fit an entire year's worth of garbage in 1 gallon Ziploc bag. We knew we needed to begin composting, but had never even seen or heard of such an option in Minneapolis, and I quickly learned why. The public drop-off sites available at the time were all at city parks, where organics bins were tucked away in parking lots and far from obvious to the public eye. I begrudgingly signed up to use the drop-off closest to me, almost 15 minutes away from my apartment by car. As inconvenient as this was, I quickly developed a routine around this drop-off and was shocked to see how much my landfill waste had reduced from this simple action. Over just a few short weeks, this action had snowballed into a whole new perspective on what I was consuming. I stopped buying products that came in non-recyclable packaging. I showed off my at-home sorting system to my friends. I became the silly daughter that would bring a bucket to my parents' house and pick through their trash, only to return to Minneapolis to drop off the organic waste I collected. An act that is even sillier when you consider that my parents live in Eagan and are significantly closer to Rosemont, where the organics waste is actually composted. Things became much easier for me once the Lowry Hill East Neighborhood Association opened their first public drop-off at the Wedge. I didn't even live in the Lowry Hill East neighborhood, but I began volunteering with the neighborhood organization, realizing that if citizens like me didn't step up to make a difference, the state of organics recycling would remain stagnant in Minneapolis. Now I have moved to St. Paul, where the organics are handled at a countywide level, providing me with even fewer drop-off options than I had in Minneapolis. I did complete that gallon Ziploc challenge with my friend. I still work actively to minimize my annual landfill waste and continue to volunteer with LENA because I saw the impact I could make with my community and hope to expand that to other regions like St. Paul facing these challenges. The funding from this bill would help organizations like ours spark personal action and grassroots efforts as it did for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then Mr. Chair, I have one more person, Priscilla Bill Watt from the Eureka.
Welcome to the committee and introduce yourself and proceed, please.
Hi, good morning. My name is Priscilla Villawatt, and I'm here representing Eureka Recycling, here to speak in favor of House File 3924. We're encouraged to hear that the state is interested in allocating funds specifically to improve access to composting for apartments or family or multifamily buildings. Composting has many added benefits to our community and the environment, and it is important that everyone have access to it. There is a critical need for healthy soil everywhere. Using compost to displace petrochemical fertilizers saves on environmental and human health costs for every ton of compost used. Bringing finished compost back to a community can be a powerful tool for community building, especially when used as soil remediation or a resource to support existing local food and community gardening movements. As we hope that the funding in this bill will lead to increased participation in composting, we recommend that portions of the funding are earmarked for developing commercial scale or community scale composting infrastructure, which is urgently needed across the state to keep up with our composting goals. The best composting program is one that is local, as it improves access to fresh, clean soil for residents and reduces the need for transportation of composting to distant facilities. This approach improves cost effectiveness by minimizing capital expenses and allowing for efficiencies of scale. It improves environmental impact by reducing the number of trucks and processing equipment required. With that in mind, we recommend this grant prioritize funding for projects that keep the composting local and community scale. Additionally, cities face the challenge of poor soil quality and soils contaminated with heavy metals and microplastics, while residents are ever more interested in growing and buying local foods. We're glad to see that this bill's grant funding would also cover the cost of educational efforts to reduce the contamination of compostable materials. Thank you for your time and work on prioritizing people in our climate through policy that supports access to composting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. And I guess I'm going to open it up to any comments right now, Representative Hornstein, or I'm going to open up the questions.
No, thank you. I think the testimony was very powerful in terms of the passions that people have around this issue and the practicality of a program that will go a long way to help the environment.
Member questions. Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question. I see there's no limit on the size of grants in the bill, or at least that I couldn't find it. And has the author thought about a way to make sure that we don't end up with a huge one multi-story, you know, come in and clobber a big chunk of that, and then there won't be anything left over for the smaller facilities?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lewick, that is an excellent point, and I would just refer back to Ms. Will Watt's testimony, which is that we want to keep this at community scale, and you know, I think this is really has statewide implications, and so we want to make sure that as many different kinds of constituencies are able to access this program in all parts of the state. So that's a good point, and you know, this would be a pollution control agency initiative, and I think that you know, guidelines to that effect would be very helpful.
Very good. Anyone in the audience that's wanting to testify on this bill? Seeing no further questions or comments or testimony, I will renew my motion to refer House File 3924, the Environment Natural Resource Finance Division. You heard the motion. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Next up is a Lippert bill, House File 3489. And Representative Lippert, you moved that House File 3489 be referred to Environment Natural Resource Finance Division. There is an author's amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and there's a DE1 amendment as well, which is what I would like to move.
And you're moving the DE1 amendment. And
so I move that, yeah, I move the DE1 amendment.
And this is just, I'm looking at the amendment just to get the bill in the shape
In conversation with the DNR, there were some minor adjustments that were made. And since the bill text was so short, it was easiest just to make a DE1 amendment.
Very good. Member, question, comments on the amendment? Seeing none. All in favor of the DE1 amendment for House File 3489, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. All Minnesotans deserve and depend on a healthy and stable climate, and we need to be integrating response to climate change into as many areas of state policy as we possibly can. In the fall of 2018, there was a study published in the journal Science Advances that found that if we are focusing on land management with carbon in mind, nationwide we can be reducing net emissions by 21%, which is equivalent to taking all vehicles off the road. But Minnesota was identified as a state that could reduce its net carbon emissions by a third if we are focusing on land management with carbon in mind. And so one area to focus on related to natural climate solutions is forestry. So this bill directs the Commissioner of Natural Resources to establish goals for increasing carbon sequestration in public and private forests in the state. There are many conversations happening right now around carbon sequestration with natural means or through natural means, and this bill intends to help focus those conversations and move us towards outcomes. The Commissioner must identify sustainable forestry management strategies that will increase the ability of forests to sequester carbon and enhance other ecosystem services like soil and water quality. The Commissioner is required to provide a progress report at the beginning of the next session, identifying high-level strategies, and then a full report identifying goals by January 2022. The Commissioner may also pull together an advisory group to help with this work. There's a lot of new information coming into this conversation, so I anticipate the DNR will be integrating new research into this report. We need to do some assessment of public and private lands, get a baseline for where we are. We need to ask where can we plant more trees and what's needed to do that and what are our best strategies moving forward. So also with me today to say more about the bill is Doug Tilma from the DNR, and he can share a little bit more about what this will look like from the DNR's perspective.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Doug Tilma, Section Manager for the Minnesota DNR Division of Forestry. And I just wanted to give some background as how the DNR Division of Forestry would respond to a requirement to provide a report on carbon sequestration strategies. The division is definitely seeing a large increase in the interest from stakeholders in how we can manage our forests to increase carbon storage, recognizing the very important role of our forests, that our forests play in offsetting greenhouse gas emissions. I've had a 25-year career with the Division of Forestry, and we manage our forests for a multiple set of values. This is sort of is a new value that we're having to integrate into our management plans to manage the forest to sequester more carbon. So we've been thinking a lot about this as of late, as the conversations are increasing. And this is our approach would be to develop a program for carbon management within the Division of Forestry. We would need staff to do that and to develop a baseline of how much carbon is currently being sequestered on our public and private lands. So this would establish a baseline level of carbon storage. We would need to work with stakeholders to identify management strategies that would increase carbon storage. Identifying the effects of those management strategies on our other forest values, things like wildlife habitat, recreation, timber production, how managing our forests for carbon storage value would either augment or impact those different values would be important, and that's important work to take with the stakeholders. Likely there would be different approaches depending on land ownership, either public land ownership or private ownership. Public forest lands management strategies might steer forest composition to sequester more carbon, for example. On private lands, incentive programs that would promote reforestation and avoid conversion to non-forest. Developing buy-in for management strategies and goals will take some time. DNR is in support of the bill, very much in line with our planned approach on the topic.
Thank you, Mr. Tilma. Any question, members? Thanks for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Lippert renews his motion that House File 3489 be referred to Environment and Natural Resources. As House File 3489 as amended.
Correct.
Be referred to Environment Natural Resource Finance Division. You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Musical chairs here. We next up is House File 3906, Representative Chair Purcell's bill. Mr. Chair, I will talk slower until you get over there. Here we go. All right. Mr. Chair, would you like to move your bill? I believe it's going to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do move that House File 3906 be passed and referred to Environment Finance.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please tell us about your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill fits pretty good with the previous bill, to be honest with you. It's a bill that has at its heart the no net loss of forest in Minnesota. And the rationale, I think some of you know, maybe many of you know, I live up in the woods up in the North Country, and there's such a value to forests in Minnesota that you can go down the list from particularly that roughly 75% of Minnesotans get their drinking water from forest parts of the states, and what forests do to for water quality and maintaining water on the land and infiltration of water that is of quality value. Forests are very integral in keeping cold and cool water lakes cool, and particularly for the fishery habitat that we value as Minnesotans, and we talk about tule being trout, whitefish, the cool water fish, and walleye is also a cool water fish. They will not survive in warm ecosystems and be productive. Mentioned stormwater runoff, the forest is just really helping in times of storm, and particularly the runoff that goes into lakes and streams, just keeping the roots that keep the soil on the land, as it were. The bill establishes a no net loss, and there's things that are not spelled out in the bill, and they're not spelled out in the bill intentionally, because we're still involved in discussion, and part of what we're my impetus here is to introduce to you all to this concept. I think it's a concept that many of us have held dear or close anyway, as Minnesotans. But it's something that I believe we need to protect, just as the previous bill referred to carbon sequestration and the fact that our lumber industry needs to be sustainable, and it by and large has been for the most part. But we need to ensure that the forests are not diminished in any significant way, and particularly in areas of the state where deforestation would be detrimental, significant detrimental to water quality. I know some of this has happened in Minnesota. I've got three pages of notes here, and I'm not going to go through them all. I'm more interested in a conversation about what we may do in working with our state agencies and the public in endeavoring to maintain a no net loss of forests in Minnesota. And you may be able to guess this is tailored after the Wetland Protection Act that has been around for some decades now, and what wetlands have done to protect water quality is very significant, and what we learned about water movement and replacing wetlands. I'm thinking of the Red River Valley out there, where wetlands were indeed drained, and now we're trying to get wetlands back because they protect in flood situations significantly, and protecting farmland and homes in flood situations. So it's tailored after the Wetlands Protection Act, and I think it'll fit very well with what we're trying to do in Minnesota in protecting environmental quality. I do have a testifier here, Madam Chair, from DNR, and would offer him to testify at this time.
Thank you.
Yep, and I would just ask the testifier to state your name for the record and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrew Ahrens. I work for the Department of Natural Resources Division of Forestry. I am here to share information about the value of Minnesota's forests. Whether you live in greater Minnesota or the metro area, trees provide many benefits and serve the public's interest. Our state has vast spruce and tamarack forests in the north. Pine, aspen, maple, and birch cover the landscape from the Iron Range to the North Shore. Oak, walnut, basswood, and other hardwoods are found in central and southern Minnesota. Our state's trees and forests reduce soil erosion by slowing rain droplets as they fall through the leaves and the needles of the canopy of our forests. They also filter and trap pollutants as water moves through forest soils. Our forests also absorb and store rainwater, thus reducing runoff and movement of nutrients. Trees and forests also provide critical resting and feeding habitat for wildlife. Our forests also provide wood fiber for our state's fifth largest manufacturing sector, the logging, pulp and paper, and lumber mills. And our forests sequester large amounts of carbon in their leaves, needles, wood, roots, and in the soil. Our state's forests, totaling 17.4 million acres, are owned and managed by a variety of agencies, organizations, and people. Currently, the state is using a few methods to encourage landowners to keep their forests as forests. The state is incentivizing continued forest cover by offering landowners the option to participate in programs like the Sustainable Forestry Initiative Act or the 2C Managed Forest Land. These two programs help private landowners keep their forests as forests by defraying the cost of owning those lands, in these cases helping with property taxes. Another method we've used is providing cost share funds through the DNR for tree planting projects. Over the years, millions of trees have been planted through this program. Focused outreach to landowners in key portions of the state could lead to many acres of continued forest cover and reforestation efforts. Future efforts could focus on groundwater contamination sites and other sensitive areas. As I finish my statement, I want to say the DNR appreciates that Representative Purcell, this committee, and the legislature are thinking about how to keep forests as forests. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? We do have a full agenda, so I ask that you keep your testimony brief.
Thank you.
Go ahead and state your name for the record and then proceed.
Sure. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mike Berkland, and I'm here today representing the 32,000 men and women who work in the woods and in the mills of Minnesota, Minnesota Forest Industries and the Minnesota Timber Producers Associations. And I, too, grew up in the North Woods, a little bit north of Representative Purcell, and still live in the North Country. And we certainly in our family, through the generations, have worked in and around the forest products industry. So it's been an important industry for lots of reasons. And I'm also proud to represent the men and women who manufacture products that come out of Minnesota's forests that benefit the world and also store carbon, CO2, on the stump or in products that are manufactured for our society. I would like to just share a couple of thoughts really off the front end, because I think sometimes, you know, the idea, there's certainly good intentions, and the title about no net loss of forest land is excellent, and we would certainly agree with that. But we also want to share some statistics that are important for everybody to know about as well. We heard about the statistic of 17.4 million acres of forest land in the state of Minnesota today. That's up almost a million acres since 1975. And across the country, we're growing forest land to the tune of about 800,000 acres a year since the year 2000. That equals about 1,500 football fields a day of forest land growth and an increase in forest land. So those are good news stories. We also have voluntary site level management guidelines that protect water quality in the woods as loggers are harvesting timber in Minnesota to protect water quality in riparian management zones. And we plant three trees, or I should say we grow three trees for every tree that's harvested in the state. So they're, from a forestry perspective and the health of our forests and forest management, there's a really positive story to tell. I don't think that counters anything in this regard, but what it does do, what this bill does do, is it causes us some current concern. Especially, we have companies who are private landowners in the state. What are the implications? How would something like this be administered and managed and regulated? Those are key questions. There are also questions related to the unintended consequences of something like this. When we already have regulatory procedures and practices in place, and we have guidelines in place that are managing forest lands, and additional studies just show that the cause of deforestation across this country typically is related to other reasons other than forestry. And we like to focus on regeneration, reforestation, not deforestation. And I think that's why we have the statistics that we have. That's why we have the story that we can tell, which we think is positive, which we think is beneficial. And a bill like this kind of takes us away from that positive element of what we bring to the table in terms of providing products for society and ensuring sustainable, resilient forests for the future.
Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else from the audience wishing to testify? Any discussion? Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, and maybe this is a DNR question, but maybe the bill author can shed a little light on this. Do we anticipate happen to create forest banks and those types of things. I mean, we're neck deep in trying to protect wetlands for a number of decades here, and it looks like this sort of lays out that approach. And so I guess, you know, is the DNR going to have to look at being able to compensate people through a banking system or something if we start going on a one-to-one match?
Mr. Chair.
Let me just take a little stab at that, and then I'll let the gentleman also speak. The intent is to support what we have going in Minnesota, and you heard about some incentive programs, so that we can move forward and maintaining or continue to improve forests and gain acreage. It's just beneficial. There isn't any downside to that I see, and so that's the intent. And I'll let DNR talk about programs. I think you mentioned before, but you heard the question.
Mr. Ahrens.
Chair, Representative Lewick, you know, I think that's just going to require further exploration. That, you know, that concept is out there, but we'll have to work with Representative Purcell to figure that out.
Mr. Lewick, or Representative Lewick.
I guess, do you envision it going into some type of permitting system? Because some of us in rural Minnesota are familiar with the level of detail it takes and permits to replace a simple culvert on a township road. And it would seem, doesn't say this in the bill, but it just looks like we're headed to a huge level of complication if you happen to be fortunate enough to have trees on your property and decide to remove a few of them. So, I mean, what's the DNR's perspective on that? We'd like to know, obviously this is going to go to a lot of other committees, but really like to get an idea on what's the real ground truth here on developing those kind of programs. How many hydrologists will you need out there if all of a sudden everybody with a little bit of forest, private in particular, now have to go to the commissioner for permission to do something?
Mr. Ahrens, and I'll remind you that we're in the policy committee, so if you could limit to staying on the policy, that would be helpful.
Sure. Chair, Representative Lewick, again, I think this requires further exploration at this time, and so we'll be working with Representative Purcell and others to explore what that might look like.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a quick question to the bill author. If the logging industry folks say that they plant three trees for every tree taken and your bill calls for a one-to-one replacement, wouldn't it actually be a step backward?
Representative Purcell.
Using those numbers, it would sound like it, but that's not the intent of the bill, just so you know. But the no net loss would be just that. And if the forest continue to grow, and we're increasing in forests, we're doing what we set out to do. That this is intended to be a statement to support what we have going in Minnesota in managing forests and endeavoring to keep forests roots in the ground as opposed to other uses. And I just advise that the question, it kind of came up about what would somebody taking a couple of trees. This isn't my intention, isn't that somebody's not going to be able to build a house or a deck, or there's nothing of that scale that is intended in this bill. And certainly we need to, there's things that aren't in here yet, yeah, because we want to have this discussion with you all and the public and DNR and get the feedback. So,
second. I was just going to say, I think the language in the bill is it's a floor, not a ceiling on the one-to-one. So I think it allows you to do the three-to-one. Representative Lewick.
No, I recognize that, Chair Purcell. But as one who's very familiar with all the length of permits that you have to do even out in the woods to build a house, and, you know, like I say, if this looks like a long-term here, could end up adding another permit. Another interaction with the DNR where they likely wouldn't have any direct, unless they're disturbing wetland. And again, you say that, been there, done that at the county level, dealing with all those permits, building permits, and there's a lot of local management that goes into making sure we don't disturb the environment. And so I'm just urging a large amount of caution on encumbering another set of mandates that could show up at the county level, because if they got to go cross-reference with the DNR every time somebody decides to make an adjustment on forested land in their permitted capacity. I mean, just looking at, probably need to really be cautious here on where we go with this.
Representative Lewis, and as a former township officer, I know exactly what you're talking about, or very close to there too. So, point taken.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Chair Purcell, you said that this bill is intended to be a statement, but and I appreciate that, but it's more than a statement. This is appears to me that it's going to be a mandate. And you talked about what your intentions are, and hopefully they become more clear as the bill moves forward. One of the things I'm concerned about is that there's no de minimis in here. It might be one tree, it might be 100 acres. So if somebody is fortunate enough to have buy a little 40 acres or so of wooded land, all wooded, all forest, but they want to build a house on it and put a driveway in it. Housing costs are already extremely expensive. So now are you going to, in this bill, and it seems to, are you going to require that someone goes out and now buys some more land and plants more trees to make up for the loss from the driveway and the housing site?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's certainly that not the intent to do that, as I said earlier, about building a house or a deck. But we do need to work on the de minimis, and you may know, you all probably know the de minimis on wetland draining activities, 400 square feet. Don't think we're going there anywhere close to that, but we do need to come up with something that would say de minimis as we move ahead in endeavoring to support the policies that we have in place now with the DNR and the forest industry.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Purcell, Chair Purcell, you heard the testimony from Mr. Berkland. Do you agree with his statistics, his numbers that he has about how we're actually gaining forest lands in Minnesota?
I do not have it.
Representative Purcell, and I'll just clarify for folks, if you go to line 1.8, this bill applies to deforesting, so it's permanently removing trees from the landscape to clear the land for an alternate purpose. So I think that ongoing forestry practices, this would not apply to. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just, if I may, just a little further, forest land is defined as well. And it's set in the bill, the forest land is defined. So there are some sideboards here. And now, tell me your question again.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you heard the testimony from Mr. Berkman.
Yes.
on how we are actually increasing the number of acres of forest land in Minnesota. Do you agree with those statistics, those numbers?
Representative Purcell.
I don't have reason to disagree with those numbers, and again, this bill is intended to be supportive of no net loss and continue to gain if we can.
Well, and I would say too, I know he cited 1975. I don't know where we would be compared to 1700 or 1853. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and again, I live up north. I'm even further north than you, but it appears to me that at this time, this is a solution looking for a problem. I know lots of people that plant trees and they are expanding their forest inventory on their own private land. I'm concerned about the impact that this might have on private property owners, maybe county forests or whatever. You need to clear something to put in a new township road. There's a lot of unanswered questions here, Representative Purcell. I appreciate where your heart is, but I think that This is going to require some very, very heavy lifting on your part.
Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Most of my questions have been covered already, but I just have one quick one. As a local government guy who, along with many others, is a little gun-shy from unfunded mandates, who's going to be responsible for enforcing this and making sure that it's followed through?
Representative Purcell.
And we're certainly, Madam Chair, Representative Bull, we're certainly, I've got the DNR sitting with me because I don't know any other entity that would be looking out, doing what they're already doing, and this is intended to be supportive of that.
Again, if this is going to Environment Finance, so I assume who's going to pay for it could be discussed at that point. Any other discussion? Representative Lewitt, please keep it quick.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, and that's part of the problem with this bill is this process of glossing over a huge amount of really big policy issues that affect private citizens, A person, may not, D forest. So I would hope that the author would, after it's been checked for how much this is going to cost, comes back here. Because when you look at the 2.16 and 2.17, that is a huge, huge mandate for every individual in Minnesota that owns forest land. And so to just zip away it goes to finance and we never see it again, I don't think we're doing really doing a good job here unless that comes right back here again after finance and the DNR has been able to lay out exactly what they're going to do and how much it's going to cost. And again, that's the world we work in, but that's my concern here with the bill.
Thank you, and I'd encourage folks to take a look at the definition of forest land as well as this moves forward. With that, Chair Purcell, would you like to renew your motion that the bill be referred to the Environment Finance Division?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. And you're off to Environment Finance. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next up is Representative Hansen. House File 3657. Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move House File 3657, and that is going to Government Operations.
So moved. Representative Hansen moves to refer House File 3657 to Government Operations. Looks like we do have an author's amendment. Representative Hansen, do you want to move your amendment?
Yes. Members, the amendment, I would move the A1 amendment to House File 3657 to get the bill in the shape I would like. What the A1 amendment is a compilation of the bills that have been passed out of this committee to the General Register previously. So it's Representative Sandsteed's House File 3363. Representative Lee's House File 721 and House File 3342, Representative Becker Finn's House File 3535, and Representative Eklund's House File 3239.
Discussion? All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. Representative Hansen, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to House File 3657 as amendment, this is the DNR policy bill that is chock full of technical provisions that I have with me, Mr. Fronauer, who is going from the DNR, who is going to walk through them with us.
All right, please go ahead with your testimony and introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, committee members, Nick Fronauer, Minnesota DNR. Thank you for having me here to walk through the bill. This bill is technical and policy changes to law to enable the DNR to better manage its programs. I will step through the bill roughly in the order of the sections. Starting off with the first section, to clarify the definition of certifiable fish diseases to include the presence of pathogens known to cause disease. As currently written, only fish that are clinically showing signs of disease are counted. The next section deals with the technical correction to replace the reference to the official VHS list to point towards the list published in the Fish Health Blue Book. The next topic changes typo to the trust lands reporting timeline from biannually, which is twice yearly, to the intended biennially, which is once per biennium. The next topic is removing the sunset provision on the invasive carp tagging. The next section clarifies several state park and outdoor recreation statutes by removing statutory references that no longer apply and updating outdated language. The next topic is formalizing the DNR's ability to hold vehicle owners responsible for permit violation to state park vehicle permits. The next section allows the DNR to formally set standards for policies for parks and trails services, such as tours, programs, and events, the same way that we do for campsites and lodging. The next topic authorizes the DNR to issue permits for the breeding and sale of native snakes, salamanders, and lizards to bring sellers into compliance with the current law. The next section modifies statute to create an equitable and uniform application of violation criteria to minnow dealers with other fish and game licenses. The next change is to clarify night vision equipment definitions and penalties for taking protected wild animals while using this equipment. The next topic clarifies the use of crossbows in lieu of firearms during the deer, bear, and turkey seasons. The next section gives the DNR authority to make in-season regulation changes on Red Lake, similar to what we do on Mille Lacs Lake. The next topic is a technical correction, aligning rule and statute to clarify that one net is allowed for Cisco and whitefish netting. The next one is a technical correction that replaces the specific date for the Lake Superior Management Plan to a plan report once every 10 years. The next topic is streamlining the DNR and Met Council review and approval of local Mississippi River Corridor critical area plans and regulations. This would allow for more coordinated review between the agencies and reduce the review time. And the last topic that we propose changing clarifies that wild rice leasees are responsible for the costs associated with land exchanges that were authorized by prior statute. Thank you. That summarizes our changes to the technical policy bill, and I can take any questions you may have.
Representative Heisman, is this for this testifier? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a little bit of a question on the section relative to crossbows. This is something that I care a lot about. As you looking to see, it may say it there and I missed it, but I'm assuming that whoever may have a valid archery license as they come into the firearm season would be able to use their crossbow and their archery tag would suffice.
Mr. Fronauer?
I'll bring down Mr. Pat Rivers, who's with the Fish and Wildlife Division, who can answer that question.
And while he's walking down, I will welcome, we have some 8th to 12th grade students from Lionsgate Academy, which is in my neck of the woods in Shoreview. So welcome to the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee. Mr. Rivers, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, thank you. Committee members, Pat Rivers, Minnesota DNR. I believe the intent is to allow crossbows, provided you have the license for a firearm of choice for that season. So if you're deer hunting, you need to have a deer hunting firearms license, not an archery license.
Representative Heisman?
Thank you. Is it spelled out anywhere? Because I think that it might make more sense. You already have an archery tag, presumably, and you're using archery equipment. It is a crossbow, but maybe Representative Hansen could speak to the intent there as the author.
Representative Hansen.
The intent is as Mr. Rivers, so we're looking at the shotgun or the firearm requirements rather than the archery.
Anyone else would like to testify on this bill? All right. Further discussion, members? All right. Any closing comments, Representative Hansen?
I'd ask for your support.
All right. Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 3657, as amended, be referred to the Government Operations Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. 3657 is on its way to Government Operations. And I think I saw Representative Marquardt. We can take up your bill next. Welcome, Representative Marquardt. I will move House File 3709 be referred to the Committee on Local Government. Representative Marquardt, if you would like to tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 3703 raises the per diem cap for Soil and Water Conservation District supervisors from $75 to $125 per diem. So this has not been raised since 2003. Remember, Soil and Water Conservation District supervisors are elected officials. Also, last year, Watershed District supervisors per diem went from $75 to $125 per diem. Now, this is their only compensation. They don't get a salary. They do get meals and travel and that type of thing, but there's no other salary for these officials. There's a lot of things that have that they do. Excuse me, members. I took a minutes from the Clay County Soil and Water Conservation District, and just that one meeting, they looked at approving the Envirothon account, approve buffer state cost share, cover crop cost share, aquatic invasive species, pollinator project, CREP update, noxious weed grant program. So they deal with a lot of different things. So I do have Sheila Banny here, Assistant Director of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation District, if people have questions. But it's moving from 75 to 125.
All right, and thank you, Representative Marquardt. And I do want to amend my motion. We're actually moving 3703. So we would be referring 3703 to the Local Government Committee. Ms. Vanny, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Sheila Vanny, Assistant Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And I think Chair Marquardt summarized the bill pretty well. I'm available for any questions.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Marquardt, is there any restrictions as we're raising the reimbursement or the per diem on, let's say, for example, a watershed district or a lake association may currently have a meeting schedule of one meeting a month or maybe two. If we raise per diem, do you think there'll be a change and we might see two, three meetings, four meetings? That could change. Is there any kind of protection there for taxpayers?
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Heitzman. This, you know, these funds would come out of their existing funds, and I think the ultimate accountability is these are elected officials. And I think if people know that this is being abused, they're accountable to the voters. So there's no requirements on it. Usually it's a monthly meeting. If there's a regional meeting that they go to, that would also count, but there's no restrictions on the number, but I just don't think with past practice and the fact that they're accountable to voters, and it comes out of their own budget, so it's not like it's extra funding from the state to compensate this. This is out of their existing budget.
Representative Heintzman.
Just a clarification. We're still talking about taxpayer dollars. That's the point I was making. Thank you.
Right. Representative Lewick.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess, and this to the bill author, at least my understanding is at the local level, at Soil and Water Conservation District in many counties is significantly funded by local property taxes. So the county board has more than a passing interest on this. And most counties have very specific guidance on folks that are involved in all kinds of things as to what, including their own, what they're allowed for per diem. And is this going to conflict with local jurisdiction? Because this says you're going to pay $125 per meeting, doesn't apparently acknowledge that local units of government, at least the county level, may have, I doubt they've got more favorable per diem rates, but I can tell you this is higher than most county commissioners in a lot of areas in our area. They don't get this kind of per diem for a meeting. And so, I mean, I'm just looking here. If we really squeeze that out, because I can see this is going to maybe upset a few people in my neck of the woods.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt, Ms. Vanney could better talk to
Ms. Vanney. How that would work.
Madam Chair, Representative Lewick, the mix of SWCD funds, you're right. There is a large part of an SWCD's budget that comes from local property tax revenue through a county appropriation to an SWCD. And there's also state funding to an SWCD in coming from a couple different sources and through the Board of Water and Soil Resources. So yes, we are very conscious of the public stewardship that needs to happen around those taxpayer dollars. I'm not familiar with what per diem rates are being used at a county commissioner level or other LGUs. What I do know is that this is an up to amount. So not everybody, not every SWCD would elect to set 125 as their per diem rate. It would, you know, depend in large part on their workload, their budget resources, and so on and so forth. So the other thing is that, again, this hasn't increased for 17 years and may not increase for another 17, being specified in statute that way, you know, does put some limitations on future activities. So it's an up to amount, and I can tell you too that currently, even with the $75 maximum, we have SWCDs through a variety of, for a variety of reasons, either don't have, like they have set it at zero. Some of them are absolutely 100% volunteer with just getting mileage reimbursements. Some of them have set it at 55. So there's a large spectrum, I guess, with 88 SWCDs across the state, you know, looking at their workload and their resources and being elected bodies and trying to be good stewards of property tax and state funds.
Well, thank you.
Representative Lewitt.
That just wanted to raise that point because at the local level, at the county board table, when you start talking about per diems with the vast number of advisory groups and people that are not advisory, planning commission people and boards of adjustment and those types of things that you want to make sure we don't unintentionally cause a little bit of friction, because particularly concerned about those counties that are already doing a good job of supplementing the state funds, and they don't go, oh, geez, now what are we doing here? As long as it stays in line with what the local unit of government's doing, it certainly I don't think anybody's going to be concerned, because I agree that there's a lot of work involved, particularly if they add site visits to particular projects to the regular meeting. It can get pretty pretty busy time. Thank you.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I strongly support this bill. I think that, you know, there's a variety of protections for the taxpayer in it. For example, if you're a soil and water supervisor, at the beginning of the year, you're going to set your rates. So that's a public action. There's a vote. And then I think even each month, if I remember correctly, you approve the expenditures from the prior month. So the per diem that's there, and it's a public document. And we required 12 years ago about putting all that online so people can see it. But I think this is a larger question. You get what you pay for. And in today's world, it's a different world than in 1948 or 1952 when the system was set up. And so you have people that are working jobs. So if you want working people to be involved in this, if you want young people with families who've got to get daycare, if you want a diverse mix of elected officials, you need to compensate them for the cost that it is for them to participate in public, because they're going to have, even a regular meeting, you're going to have to take half a day off of work. And if you're losing money by doing that, if your employer doesn't provide that, or you've got to do that in order to put food on the table, then we get a different mix of people who are serving in office. And so $125 a day is not that much when you look at where people are at. And there is a price to public participation. There's a price to those who participate, and but there's a value that is greater than that price. And that value is when you have people involved, then you get a better outcome. And the more people that are involved and the more diverse that mix of people that are involved, the better the outcome that you get in terms of representation and quality of the product. So it's not just soil and water districts that need this. We look at throughout our public participation, we are still stuck in many cases at $55 a day. And that's why we can't get people to take the time off to participate. It's always the same people who may have the luxury of wealth or time, or wealth and time to participate. And so we need to do this not just here. We did it for watershed districts last year. We should do it for the soil and water districts, who have an even greater public accountability because they're elected than watershed districts. And we need to do it for other participation. Otherwise, we're not going to have people who can take the time. Only those with means or time are able to take the time.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to weigh in on this, but I don't disagree with what Representative Hansen is saying, but I sit here wondering, why is the state involved in this? If these salaries are set locally, this puts a cap on it, I guess, but with local folks paying at least part of these costs, it's an example of the state stepping in here and saying, you will do this or you will do that, and I'm not so sure we should be doing that. I, too, agree that SWCDs do very good work, and the amount is minimal for the time they put into it. But again, my question is, why is the state setting this and how that came to be? I'm not sure.
That's just a statement more than a question, I take it. Representative Anderson? Yeah. Thank you. Anyone in the audience looking to testify on this bill? Any further comments, members, questions? Hearing no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 3703 be approved and referred to local government. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
Motion carried.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Next bill before us is a Becker Finn bill, House File 3352. Would you move your bill, Representative Becker Finn?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move my bill. And if you'll remind me, I think the next stop is Environment Finance. Okay. So my motion would be to move House File 3352 to be referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Division.
Very good. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the annual DNR lands bill, and I'm actually going to have my testifier from the DNR walk through this. It's your typical lands bill with maps and really specific nerdy things. And I've asked her to try to speak quickly so we can get through this today.
Representative Becker Finn, let me ask, do you want to do your A2 amendment and the other amendment? Or
I think let's walk through it first, Mr. Chair, if that's okay with you.
Very
and
good.
Then we'll add those things on.
Don't
after
let me
on.
Forget.
Right.
Thank you. Please, to the testifier, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Susan Damon, Assistant Director, Division of Lands and Minerals at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. So I'll walk through the bill section by section. Section 1 amends Minnesota Statute Section 84.63, This amendment would allow the DNR to convey easements for trails, highways, or roads to federally recognized Indian tribes. Currently, the DNR only has authority to convey easements to the federal government and to the state and subdivisions of the state. Section 2 pertains to leases for, these are for large complex trail projects, and it would enable the DNR to assess reasonable projected costs of monitoring the construction of these recreational trails or facilities on DNR-administered land. The language that's proposed mirrors statutory provisions that currently allow the DNR to assess such fees for construction of utility lines and construction of improvements on DNR-granted easements. Section 3 and Section 5, this is an addition deletion to the boundary of Fort Snelling State Park in Dakota County. The intention is to add 36.72 acres to the boundary and to delete 8.3 acres from the boundary. All of the lands that are involved are currently state lands administered by either the DNR or MnDOT or jointly administered, and the intent of this is to better align the state park boundaries for management purposes. Section 4 would add 30.07 acres to the boundary of the Iron Range Off-Highway Vehicle State Recreation Area in St. Louis County. Again, this would add a parcel that is already administered by the state, and it will provide a critical east-west trail connection between Gilbert and Virginia. Our final boundary change is Section 5, Subdivision 2, and this would delete 4.02 acres from the boundary of William O'Brien State Park in Washington County. This area covers an easement that is currently not used. It was acquired along with a parcel that is part of the park, but it is not used for access. And this would address some encroachments on the easement. Section 6 authorizes the private sale of 1.24 acres of surplus land in Cass County. This is a strip of land that was acquired to be an access to Horseshoe Lake AMA. This AMA is primarily for shoreland protection, gets very little public use, and a neighboring farmer is interested in acquiring the strip of land that was used for access. The DNR will retain a management access easement over this parcel. Section 7, this is intended to be part of an acquisition and sale. The DNR will sell a strip of land to a neighboring landowner. The strip of land was originally acquired for access to a parcel that was acquired to build the Rocky Point public water access. It has not yet been constructed. There's now a new county road that will provide future access. We'll sell the landowner the strip of land that was acquired for access, and then the landowner will sell basically an equivalent amount of land to square off the southern piece of the property. Section 8 authorizes private sale of 2 acres of surplus land in St. Louis County to New Independence Township at no cost. The DNR originally acquired this parcel from the township in 1938 for a fire tower. It's no longer needed for a fire tower site, and the intention is to convey that back to the township, which owns all of the land surrounding this parcel. And then finally, the DNR wishes to sell a parcel of surplus land bordering the Red Eye River in Wadena County. It's 39.5 acres. This would be sold by public sale, and because it's a riparian parcel, we require legislation to sell the land. There's currently no public access. It's surrounded entirely by private land. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Beckerfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know it went fast, but we were, make sure you look at the maps that were just handed out, because a lot of this becomes clear about what they're trying to do if you take a look at the maps. And I'm also prepared to move the A3 amendment, and that's just clarifying some things to make sure that with the fee regarding the construction of a trail, that if there's excess fees collected, those can be returned. And then there was some question about whether it was Independence Township or New Independence Township, so we're just updating that to make sure that we've got our bases covered. So I would move the A3 amendment.
Very good. The A3 amendment is before us. Any discussion? All in favor of the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Guinness.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is for DNR. The Fort Snelling State Park is in my district, and nobody talked to me about the change that you're getting ready to make. So one of the questions I have is, it is very difficult for people to get to Fort Snelling unless they have a car. And so we have worked in the past to make sure that people who are walking or on bikes can get into Fort Snelling, either the upper or lower. And my question is, does this sale do anything to get in the way of having people be able to enter the park? Other than my car or tourist bus.
Ms. Damon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I will have to consult with the Division of Parks and Trails to get you an answer, and I apologize that you were not notified. I know that the Division of Parks and Trails does send out letters to the affected legislators whenever they have a piece of legislation. They've had a departure of a key person recently, which may have something to do with you're not getting the notice yet, but I will make sure that you get detailed information.
Representative Guinness.
It is the specific question about access to the park by foot or by bicycle, bikes in particular, and that it's safe to do so.
Ms. Damon, if you get that back to the committee, the information, we'll make sure that Representative Wagenius gets that too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I will try to get to you shortly.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do want to move the A2 amendment. This is actually the amendment form of Representative Eklund's bill that's on our agenda today. I don't know if folks have members have questions, I can have Representative Eklund is here as well. But I believe he did work this out with the DNR, and they approve of adding this to the lands bill, as this is the appropriate place to address this. So I would move the A2 amendment.
Any A2 amendment before us? Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Amendment is adopted. And anyone else looking to testify on House File 3352? We have a testifier. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello. Thank you. My name is Stephanie Chappell. I'm here on behalf of myself and concern about Minnesota history and also Minnesota genealogy. I'm not comfortable with including a single person that can make a decision to forever eliminate land from the state of Minnesota and the United States by including the federally recognized tribes. It would do that. I don't think any one person should be burdened with thinking, did I make the right decision or didn't I make the right decision? Including federally recognized tribes opens a Pandora's box between Minnesota, the United States, and tribal nations. adding this language, such the stage for loss of land and a method of land reclamation that ignores U.S. and state decisions and processes prior and future. There is no matrix or structure to determine how land would be given away to a tribal nation or which tribal nation would be first to receive the land. The bill's language does not include a hierarchy of any kind for any of the federally recognized tribes. It's not just limited to Minnesota tribes. This bill further complicates issues. 2017's lands bill under Chapter 54, subsection 23, included Redwood County land to be conveyed to the Lower Sioux Indian community, a federally recognized tribe. The land was to be conveyed to this tribal nation. The Lower Sioux had already posed the land question in court under an 1863 treaty, and the court determined there was no claim to the land under that law. 3352's wording would allow the DNR commissioner, a single person, to sign that land in Redwood County over to the Lower Sioux without any consultation of any court, state, or federal agency, or local government unit, or nearby neighbors. In Redwood County, that would include descendants of persons buried on the parcel. This bill, rather than clarifying the Redwood County from 2017, further confuses the situation, since the Redwood County land is on the National Register of Historic Places and contains a cemetery, viewable, and also contains additional unmarked graves with descendants still living in the area of those unmarked graves. The DNR had no knowledge of this historic element until the public notified the DNR in a process related to the property's Land Water Conservation Fund. Not all land requires this type of research for LWCF. This could repeat in 2019 under this bill's language. The county land under the Fort Snelling State Park situation, with the additions and its deletions, may also hold significant historic information. But it needs to be fully reviewed by several agencies, not just the DNR. Other agencies that could help would be the State Historic Preservation Office, which got involved with Redwood County recently, and other administrative branches. Also, 3352 sets up a conflict for interest. The representative is of a Native background and descendancy, and also another state employee could also find themselves pinned between their cultural background, their membership in a federally recognized tribe, and their duties to the state of Minnesota. It's not fair to anyone, especially those caught in the middle that may have to make a choice between their heritage and the state. Lastly, all parcels need to be fully reviewed for future wealth. Even a little small 2-acre parcel could hold towers for cells, for rural broadband. They could hold solar panels to light up dangerous intersections in rural areas. Those gravel roads at night don't show dust. And also, it could promote pollinator and future growth. This really needs to be reviewed, so please remove the new language from lines 1.9 and 1.11 and 1.12. It will save the state from losing historic lands and the clean energy it can produce, along with income, tax base, and life improvement for Minnesota now and in the future. Clarifying language for additions to and deletions to state-owned land, such as in this case, Fort Snelling State Park, would also be advantageous. And that is in lines 6.72 through 7.11. Thank you. And I appreciate your time.
Thanks for your testimony.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Beckerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do want to thank Ms. Chaparral for her perspective and point of view, but I do want to clarify a couple things. And I think if it was confusing to her, maybe it's confusing to other folks. And so I do want to clarify what's going on in this bill. So Section 1 regarding the conveyance of interests and lands to state, federal, and tribal governments is actually very specific and not directly related to any of the other sections of this bill where we're selling or buying pieces of land. So the first section is actually authorizing the DNR to give easements to tribal governments, not taking anything away from tribal governments. It actually formalizes. There's a lot of places in our statute that are not up to date with actually treating our tribal governments as full sovereign governments that we interact with on a government-to-government basis. And so this would actually allow them, the DNR, to authorize easements to tribal governments the same way they do to the federal government or other divisions of the state. So I appreciate the perspective and the feelings about making sure that we're looking out for the land and recognizing the history, but this is actually separate from what's happening, for instance, in Sections 3 and 5 regarding Fort Snelling, where we're just changing whether the DNR or MnDOT has authority. We're not losing any land or taking any land around Fort Snelling. So just wanted to clarify that. Happy to take questions if there's further discussion from folks.
Thank you for that clarification. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The author, the testifier brought up a situation in Redwood County. Would that be affected by this bill?
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think there's anything in Redwood County mentioned in this bill. This is just generally making sure that we're treating tribal governments the same as we treat other forms of government. So there's nothing specific to Redwood County in the bill.
Other questions? Any other testifiers from the audience on this bill? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Beckerfin renews her motion, House File 3352, as amended, to refer to Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Division. I heard the motion. All in favor say aye. 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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Beckerfin. And Representative Liz Lagarde.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and everybody for waiting around for my big moment here.
Indeed. Please tell us, you move your bill.
I do, Mr. Chair.
To be, so House File 3819 to be referred to the General Register. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Liz Lagarde.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this bill is about keeping up with technologies. When all-terrain vehicles were first manufactured way back when, they didn't have the suspension that they currently have now, and so therefore they required great big tires with low pressure to be more stable and for comfort. But, you know, we went from no cars to cars to Mars, and technologies actually advanced quite well, so this is a little outdated, and that's what this bill is. And so I have Ray here to answer any questions that you may have.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bone. I'm here representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota. Just some of the quick points I'd like to make. There's no clear definition of what low pressure is in the statute. And it's causing some conflict because the tires are changing that are being put on, especially newly manufactured machines. And the conflict arises with our enforcement. They look at these tires and they don't know quite how to react to them or how to deal with them. So as a consequence, we met with DNR last summer and we discussed these tires and the definition, and we decided the best thing to do was just eliminate the low pressure, and pneumatic tires. The only place where I think pneumatic tires are used that I know of, and I've heard about, is in the Middle East on some Polaris ATVs in the Middle East. Because as you know, they can take a bullet and not go flat. So anyway, Wisconsin just adopted this same sort of provision so that they no longer have to deal with this issue from a standpoint as well. Again, the market has changed and is changing for the last several years. A lot, if not most, of the tires that have been put on new machines, depending upon what we would decide is a low-pressure tire, maybe could not meet that definition. So this is actually a point of clarity. Again, we've talked to DNR about it. They're in agreement. And they've also been very restrained in their approach on this matter, and they're happy to come up and discuss it as well. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
And thank you for that. I do have another testifier on paper here. DNR, Colonel Smith. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
For the record, Colonel Rodman Smith, Director of Enforcement, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, members, we do fully support this. The low pressure, there is no definition of low pressure. Things have changed. Not to reiterate what Mr. Bowen said, but another area we're seeing the differences in what people use for tires is in ag country. They like to put on, if you're not familiar, there's a lot of folks in ag that are switching from the big tires on the tractors to the tracks because of compression issues and whatnot. And so we're seeing a number of farmers also changing the tires out on their ATVs. This helps a lot of folks. This change is common sense, and DNR fully supports it. And we appreciate ADVAM and Representative Listegard bringing this forward.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Questions, comments, members? Representative Guineas.
Thank you. I'd like to hear that an industry is trying to keep up with the times. Does that mean that this industry is also becoming electrified?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really good question, but I'm probably not. Oh, Mr. Chair.
Oh, please, go ahead.
We'll let this fine gentleman answer that question.
And please say your name again and proceed. Did you hear the question?
This is Ray Bone again from ADVAM. Mr. Chair, Representative Guineas, I do know that Polaris, in fact, has produced some electrical vehicles. We do have someone from Polaris, I think, that could address that if you'd like them to come up.
We've got a few minutes left until we have to be out of here, so I'm let's defer right now. Thank you for bringing that up, and I'm sure Representative Guineas will find that Polaris person and answer that question. Seeing no further discussion or testimony, Representative Listegard renews his motion. Oh, final comment. Sorry about that. Representative Listegard, final comments on your bill.
This is a great bill, Mr. Chair, and I just ask for all the support I could get.
Very good. Representative Listegard renews his motion. House File 3819 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, members. We don't have any more bills, and we got done time. We aren't coming back tonight, so enjoy your dinner. We are adjourned.